Our next session, we want to talk about the path forward for digital radio to illuminate both the present and the future. We now present a fireside chat with Neil Shore, who is the CEO of Triton Digital, a technology company that provides solutions for audio publishers to measure and monetize their audiences, and for advertisers to easily access audio inventory. Neil is going to be interviewed by one of our friends, Ali Abhari, who is the CEO of the Turkish media group Karnaval. So please welcome Neil Shore and Ali Abhari.
Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Kurt. Before I introduce our guests, a few words about myself. I've been to a number of these RAIN summits in the past. I've spoken at a few of them here in Europe and in the U.S. And my background is that I actually don't come from media. I don't come from radio or audio, but I've been in the business for about 4 years. About 4 years ago, I was tasked with the job of taking over the third largest radio broadcaster at the time in Turkey, and I was given the challenge of building a digital story, a digital presence for that radio broadcaster. At the time, we had absolutely no presence in the digital space whatsoever, and it was a daunting challenge. And one of the very first things I did after scouring the world was find this gentleman and his company, and to take them on, not really as a supplier, but more as a partner for the strategy and the business that we wanted to develop in Turkey. Fast forward to 4 years later, we are now the largest radio broadcaster in Turkey. We've had tremendous growth both on the digital and on the terrestrial side. We have a digital platform, Karnaval, which is the largest internet radio service in Turkey and one of the top 10 in the world as measured by webcast metrics. We are been growing fantastically. We've had revenue growth of three times in that time period and even stronger EBITDA growth. And I think a lot of that success is due in no small part to the work that we've done together with Triton Digital. So with that, we welcome Neil, and thank you for coming out.
If I wasn't so jet lagged, I'd be blushing right now.
So tell us, there's a number of buckets of work that you guys do, and one area is around simulcast and streaming and ad insertion. Tell us about the general trends that you see worldwide in that area.
So when Brett asked for me to do the panel, he said, how specific can you be on talking about trends? And I constantly get asked about trends as I travel the world and talk about really evangelizing streaming audio and digital audio as a whole. What I learned is timing is wrong. So the first interesting trend is what we thought was going to take place in 2012, 2013 is actually happening now. So the most exciting thing, and even just watching this morning's sessions, is it's fascinating to see how, whether it be on demand or live, the audio world is really reinvigorated. When I looked at the advertising panel and compared it to some of the other RAIN summits and some of the other opportunities that we've had to present or participate in around the globe, it's also reinvigorating. So this concept of change and digital audio really being in the forefront of digital everything is primary. Go ahead.
Do you see a lot of the growth happening with pure play broadcasters or AM/FM?
I think it's happening in a very democratized way right now. So it used to be just even a year ago, we were talking about pure play publishers and traditional broadcasters. And when you take a look about what NRJ is doing or what Priest is doing, just to name a couple traditional broadcasters, BBC, to name a few traditional broadcasters and how they've evolved even in the last 12 months, and compare Spotify, Pandora, Deezer, Slacker, Ardio, and the list goes on and on. And if we just look at our own A2X exchange, the programmatic exchange that we have over 100 publishers, whether they be traditional or pure play publishers, in the exchange today. A year ago, it was less than half of that. So extremely dramatic.
you know, maybe I'll take a bit of a controversial stance, but Bob Pittman at iHeartMedia is well known for making a distinction between how you collect your music and radio. And he makes the argument that's clearly how you collect your music has changed and evolved over the years. You used to collect it on LPs and 8-tracks and then on CDs and on MP3s, and now it's in the cloud. But it's never been a medium that was conducive to advertising. You didn't have ads in between every song on your CD. And that certainly is when you look at the on-demand players like Spotify or Deezer or Pandora, that's where they're playing. But radio has always been one that has connected with audiences. You know, you wake up to find out what happened overnight. You want to know what the latest news is, what the latest sports scores are. You want to connect with your audiences in a social way. And at the same time, maybe find out, you know, the latest offer that your bank has or the newest car that's out there. Therefore, it's more conducive as a listening experience to advertising. Do you see the ad loads or the ad take-up rates being different in those two mediums?
It's a great question. I have been preaching for a very long time that two key things have to happen, and they're happening now. One is registration. We have to force registration inside from the publisher, whether it be traditional or a pure play publisher, in order to get first-party data. Les was talking about it earlier, others as well, Les Hollander. You need to have the information, and information becomes more and more important over time. Second, I think the concept of great content is no different than any other form of media. Have to have it, and if there's audio spam, which is 16, 18, 20 commercial units an hour inside the stream, the audience just won't tolerate it. It's just not going to happen. So there's significant empirical data that supports the publishers that are moving in the direction of a more pure play publisher, which is 3 to 5 units an hour, maybe 3 to 6 units an hour, versus the traditional simulcast model. Simulcasting can't be a strategy for digital audio. It's a Band-Aid for now. It's a way that you can put your toe in the digital water, but it is not actually a digital strategy.
Interesting. And tell us about metrics as well. I mean, I know that you have recently launched webcast metrics local and in the U.S. How does that translate into Europe? And maybe tell the folks here a little bit more about webcast metrics itself.
Sure. So webcast metrics has been widely deployed in the United States now for several years. There's two products. One is Webcast Metrics National. It's just a traditional ranker product that local broadcasters were using for several years in order to help monetize in some sort of upsell form. So again, a little bit of a get started digital product. We launched a couple years ago Webcast Metrics Local, which is a product that's really become the currency for digital audio in the United States. Our launch partner with that was Pandora. Spotify has signed on. Recently, as 2 weeks ago, we announced that iHeart in the United States is also inside Webcast Metrics Local. So why is that important? There's data. There's information. It's very, very solid, and the currency that's utilized in a similar form to traditional currency is now available in digital. So you can go into the media buyer in the United States, and you can use a similar type of terminology and a similar type of numerical or quantifiable data in order to transact. We've seen dramatic lift inside of the last 2 years inside the United States, specifically from Webcast Metrics Local. So my prediction, and this is based upon some conversations that are taking place in many European countries, Australia, and I have to be a little bit careful about that disclosure at this point, but you'll see some announcements, hopefully in the near term, about the utilization of those metrics globally. And having that uniform element, some consistency in the United States, is highly transferable across the globe. We're in deep discussions with some of the traditional providers of metrics, is similar to the provider of metrics in the United States, has just struggled with a transition of their own. So we are a partner to the broadcasters, whether they're traditional or pure play, and really one of our primary goals is unification in the marketplace and using metrics metrics to do it or quantifiable data is always great.
Does it cause a challenge for you as Triton to have both a metrics division as well as being involved in streaming and ad insertion? Is there a conflict between those two?
You know, it's funny. We get asked that a lot. And in 2009, we launched an ad network specifically because in the United States, the publisher base was dissatisfied with the options. So it was we took phone calls from some of the largest publishers, and they said, help us monetize. And we did. We're not a publisher, so we serve at the pleasure of the publishers on a global basis. And so really what we do, we're a technology company. And so we deploy our technology in order to really drive monetization. We do have an ad network in the United States, but really, and global presence as well, but we're really focused on the technology pieces and to use the technology in order to drive the revenue for the publisher. So that's when A2X, our programmatic exchange, was launched. I believe we were the first global international exchange for programmatic. Programmatic's a great topic. It's also a great word because it means different things to different people. I've heard the jokes about RT being raced to the bottom, and that always irritates me because in audio it's premium inventory, and there's more and more premium publishers coming in every single day, including Spotify and others that you're hearing from today. So you wind up in a situation where radio always has been defensive, and now digital audio has a little bit of a defense, but and you mentioned this before as well, there's so many different units and so many different, so much premium content out there, and that's just live. We'll talk about on-demand perhaps in a second, but the concept of mid-roll, pre-roll, targeted ad insertion, the metrics that support it, it's an industry that's really expanding at a rapid pace globally.
So that's one of my concerns as a publisher around programmatic is that it would commoditize or reduce our CPMs over time, just as it has in display in some ways. But I'm concerned about that. I don't know if that's something that
it's
you,
the
you
exact
expect.
Opposite. We have case study after case study that challenges that assumptions with dollars that are flowing. So CPMs that were specifically in the United States, CPMs that were coming from the network channel, network radio channel, the simple, non-targeted, very tonnage-oriented, $3 to $5 type CPMs from similar advertisers, and most important, new advertisers that are coming to the space, our CPMs are double, triple, in some cases quadruple what they were just 2 years ago. And that's, again, based upon the targeting and the technology and attribution and the drivers for what digital audio is supposed to be.
Okay. And tell me, you mentioned on-demand and podcasting as well, and we talked about podcasting a little bit earlier today. Tell me about what you guys are doing in that space.
A few things besides really focused on publisher monetization. So a big part of the strategy is podcasting or on demand. What I find super interesting is we talked 2 years ago about how on demand is going to become more mainstream, and everyone looked at us as crazy as they thought we were when we talked about streaming being mainstream back in 2007 or 2006. So this concept of people looking at me crazy is, I guess I'm getting used to it. It's not just, the baldness that they're looking at. But the net of it is the podcasting world is exploding, and it's really supplementing the overall audio experience. So whether it be on-demand podcasting or whether it be a live product that exists or the combination of both, as many, many publishers, BBC, Prisa, iHeart, CBS, many, many but you guys doing a excellent job, whether you're in a large country, small country, whether you have a government regulation that you're constantly in challenge with or government broadcasting, or whether you are in a free independent society and it's a free enterprise. So I believe that we will see something like 300% increases in revenue in the next 18 months globally. That's a global percent from the on-demand podcasting world. And I think that's supplemental or incremental to what's happening with digital audio overall.
And you do have a global footprint. How do you see the different markets around the world for digital audio evolving? Is the United States at the forefront and you know, Europe next? And you know, how is Asia operating? Or is it the fact that you see, you know, more cutting-edge operations in other parts of the world?
Yeah, so the United States, believe it or not, has been the leader in streaming. What was formerly known as streaming, now I think broadly called digital audio. Europe is catching up quick. I think that Spotify has a lot to do with that. 6 years ago, when we took our first Spotify meeting, the feedback that we got from Daniel and his team is, we won't ever be in the advertising business. And Brian Benedict was hired and brought in a team like Les and others, and all of a sudden, I think advertising is a part of their strategy. In fact, a big part of their strategy. That has helped in Europe, specifically the UK, and certainly much throughout all of Europe. You guys are a great example. You gave your own statistics. I think, if I recall correctly, you were the number 4 network when we started working with you. You're now the number 1 network, and you just implemented a strategy while other people were, you know, figuratively stated sleeping. What's happening now in Australia is fascinating. 2 years ago, there was no digital audio strategy in Australia. There were some conversations taking place. There was a little bit of imitation taking place. And now Australia is a huge digital audio marketplace. The surprising part of the world that I'm still surprised by is Asia. Asia is still sleeping a bit. There's proliferation of cell phones and mobile and everything happening in the whole digital world. And even if you go around and see Asia, what's happening with outdoor advertising and kind of the evolving elements there, it's still a very light digital audio world.
Lastly, tell us a little bit about Apple Music and what impact it has had or will have on this space. Is your reaction similar to Daniel Ek's, you know, response, or do you view them as being, you know, significant, particularly in the advertising element?
I think that's still to be determined. I probably lean more towards Daniel's position and say, you know, Apple has been working very hard to define their digital audio strategy. They've obviously spent a lot of money in both product development and in acquisition to define their digital audio strategy. I wouldn't ever count Apple out of anything. They have the resources to be anything they want to be, but it's a very large world, and therefore Apple can play a role in it. Whether they wind up being a dramatic leader, it's to be determined. The thing I find most interesting is just heard about a publisher or a new publisher, it hasn't been announced yet, that's in a Western European marketplace that's really super cool. And so the Wild Wild West, as they say, with the digital revolution is still happening with digital audio, and therefore the kid in the garage, or whether you're the largest publisher or have the means to be the largest publisher in the world, anything can happen. And so that democratization is really a leveling the playing field that can make all tides rise.
Well, thank you very much. I think our time's up, and
thank
it's
you as well.
Great to see you again.
Excellent. Likewise. Thank you.